Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Sport pods.
I wouldn't change it, but I would love to have gone abroad.
I had to do it to get out.
You just have to take it with both hands.
Welcome to the Premier League storybook with me, Jake Humphrey. We now turn to chapter 10, the transfers. Throughout our storybook, we've heard about the great teams that wove the tapestry of the Premier League throughout the ages. But how did they come about? Even though youth products have lit up some of the best sides throughout the years, shrewd transfers and big money signings, more often than not, have one of the most crucial roles to play in success or otherwise. The entire transfer industry now is arguably the biggest aspect of the game, with articles about which team has won or lost the transfer window. Fans are always eager to see new stars don their team's colours and live in fear of their key men walking out of the door. I had a fascinating chat with Rio Ferdinand, who twice moved for a record transfer fee, as well as players and managers from down the years who have their own experiences of transfers. Fans will always focus on players trying to leave their club, but what is less publicised is clubs clearing players out. Steve McManaman, who left Liverpool for Real Madrid in 1999, explained that lesser-seen side of transfers.
I left Liverpool at the same time as Rob Jones, who's a good friend of mine, who left on a free contract because he was injured. And he sort of seeps out the back door to no fanfare, just let go because his contract's finished with a bad knee and that's the end of it. And of course, I've gone the other way. So I think that's what people don't realise. For, you know, yes, certain free transfers can seem like, oh my God, this is incredible, or, you know, this is what a great deal it is for us. But without you noticing, there's 10 people gone the other way who have just been released from the contracts and find it hard to work. So you have to take it with a huge pinch of salt.
What is clear, however, is players will always look to progress their careers and aim to move to a bigger club. Peter Crouch describes his efforts to switch from relegated Southampton to the European champions in 2005.
I was doing really well at Southampton. I loved it there. And I was flying on a personal level, but the team was struggling. So we went down and, you know, Liverpool just won the Champions League. I remember them coming in for me and I was, obviously, had to go. I mean, I think when Liverpool, a club of that size, comes for you, you just have to take it with both hands. And I remember Harry saying to me, you know, we need you next year. And I just saying, look, Harry, I've got to go. And he was quite understanding about it, but if I had stayed, I mean, he left. So he was saying, don't worry, we'll get back up. And I was, if I'd have gone, yeah, all right, Harry, I believe in you, he would have got off and I'd have been stuck at Southampton. But I loved my time at Southampton, but going to Liverpool was the best thing I ever did, and they're my fondest memories.
Big moves, as we know, don't always work out. Chris Sutton had been prolific for Norwich and Blackburn from the Premier League's inception, but a club record £10 million move to Chelsea in 1999 didn't work out. He told us what it's like to be at the eye of the storm when it all goes wrong.
I just lost a bit of confidence, really, and it was finding a way back as much as anything. And I let things affect me, which I shouldn't have done. But that's all sort of part of a learning curve. And there were, you know, I was getting battered in the press because you're brought for big money. You don't score goals. It's a bad investment. I know Ken Bates thinks that was badly spent, and it'd be quite right. But I didn't, you know, it was a difficult season. I think, you know, my family were sort of affected by it, and my wife was in London one day with my two little boys, and they had Sutton number 9 on the back of their Chelsea jerseys. That'd have been my eldest two boys, so that would have been 99. They would have been 4 or 5, and a woman came up to my wife. She said, "What have they got his shirt on for? He's useless." And they were like, I think one of my boys, Ollie, had tears in his eyes. And things like that they're the things which sort of used to get to me.
Rio Ferdinand holds the distinction of being the world's most expensive defender twice. He moved from West Ham to Leeds as a young superstar before making an even bigger move a couple of years later, joining Manchester United. I sat down with him and discussed both moves and a lot more besides. Enjoy.
Let's go back to your time at West Ham, if you wouldn't mind rewinding the clock for us. I want to talk about, obviously, you were talked about for a long time as one of the best young players in the country. When did you first realise that other clubs were interested in you, and how did that make you feel?
I think you look in the papers, I think every summer there used to be a story, whether it be, I don't know, Roma or AC Milan or Real Madrid or Barcelona. I remember being where was I, in Spain somewhere on holiday, in one of those mad places, Magaluf, with Frank. And on the back pages of the papers was, because you used to get English papers there, was Madrid or Barca or in for Rio type thing. And that just became normal for me in a mad way. But the buzz that it used to give you, I used to feel 10 foot tall. Confidence would be seeping out of my pores. It was just like an amazing feeling to feel that all of these clubs that you'd seen and thought you could never touch are actually courting you through the media. So, yeah, it was that became quite normal for me quite soon in my career.
And explain, when you say courting you through the media, did you understand that clubs were putting things out there that they wanted you to see?
Well, my agent at the time, who was like known as a super agent, Peeney Zahavi, was like, he would be telling me what's going on behind the scenes. This club, that's a lie. That club's really interested in you. But then also, weirdly enough, I met Capello's right-hand man. I forget his name now. He worked with England in London. He was at Roma at the time and just went in there and was just about to rebuild Roma and said, listen, I'm going to win the league next year. We want you to be part of it. And I was at West Ham at the time. And I said, I'm not sure. It's an unbelievable opportunity, but I'm not ready yet. So I just said that. Don't feel ready. That was too early. I met Gerard Houdier when he was at Liverpool. He asked me to come there, and thankfully I said no.
Thing is, though, in hindsight, you built an amazing career at Man United. We'll talk about it, but like, this is Liverpool, and you were a West Ham player. You had no allegiance to Manchester United at that time. So why didn't Liverpool make you think, oh, hello?
Oh no, listen, it was at the time I thought, oh my god,
yeah,
Liverpool.
It's Liverpool.
Wow, all my mates are Liverpool fans. I'd followed Liverpool because of John Barnes. Like, I wasn't a supporter of any real team, but I knew a lot about Liverpool because of John Barnes and that era. So it was like a... But it just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
And I know now, later through experiences, you know when it's right. You're never 100%. I don't think, and I think this works across all different type of businesses as well, you're never absolutely completely sure this decision is going to work out 100% right.
Yeah.
But I know I'm on the right track with it. And if I can make it work. And if I put all the things fall in line and I do my side of things, I've got a great chance of making this work. And that's how I felt once West Ham said yes to Leeds.
So how did the Leeds thing come about then? I mean, you know, Roma, amazing club, Liverpool, amazing club, Leeds obviously have got an incredible history as well. What was different about the conversation with Leeds?
The difference was timing. And also, so those previous two summers, I'd spoken to West Ham's owners at the time, Terry Brown, and I'd gone in there and said, listen, we've got great players coming through, Frank, myself, we've got Joe Cole coming with Michael Carrick, Defoe, my brother Glenn Johnson, all these players are coming through, we've got a great nucleus of young players, we could be unbelievable, we've got Di Canio here, Trevor Sinclair, etc, just add a few pieces please. They weren't willing to go into the red. You've got to respect that as the owners. And he just kept saying, we're not going to go into the red, we're running this club like we are, that's it. And then once they rang me, it was November, bearing in mind a transfer window wasn't around then. So I went in November. And madly enough, I'd played against Leeds on Wednesday, I think it was. It was rumours in the paper.
Yeah.
And the Leeds fans were singing my name and the West Ham fans were singing my name in the same game. It was mad. And then I had a phone call. I was out shopping with my dad. And the chief executive said, we've accepted a bid of £18 million from Leeds. Do you want to talk to them? They said, we're happy if you want to stay, but we've accepted the bid. If you want to go, you can go. Once they said that, I was gone.
Why is that?
Because I just thought, like, you've made a decision to sell me. I was loyal. I was like, I wanted to stay and help West Ham. I weren't thinking about anything else, really. I want West Ham I think we could win the FA Cup here. And then when they said that, I said, you know what, right, I'm off then. I want to go. When I met them, Chelsea actually offered and was willing to match the offer. But I just said I needed to leave London. I was getting in a lot of trouble off the pitch, going out too much and stuff, enjoying the finer things in life, all the invitations that I was getting because I was playing football for England and stuff. I went to Leeds, met them, and all of the financials were sorted between them and my agent. But I spoke to David O'Leary and he said, I just asked him, please coach me, make me a better player. He had a great career, just coach me. And he was like, yep, don't worry, I will. And he was true to his word.
Explain what it's like when you move clubs. Because I think we all, you know, all that the football fans talk about is the transfer fee and the new salary, and then expect you for that fee and that salary to be brilliant the following week. What are the challenges of uprooting your life, you know, normally with 2 days' notice or 24 hours' notice?
Well, I went immediately. I think the next day I left.
Wow.
But the biggest thing for me, I think that the uprooting and moving, I didn't have a family at the time. So I went with my girlfriend at the time. It became my wife, but I think with a family it's very different when you move, but there's not so much to think about for me. All I've got to do is get my backpack and go, which I've done. The biggest factor is actually when you go for a big fee as well, is proving that you're worth it.
Yeah.
And so the most nervous part was doing even the medical work to kick a ball with the physio, and I was so nervous. Like, he's expecting a certain level. What's the level? What is it? I don't know what it is. What's 18 million look like? Am I meant to kick it different? Like, you start asking yourself mad questions. It's really surreal. But going in there, meeting new teammates who then expect to see what 18 mil is.
Mm. And I was going to say, if you're nervous in front of the physio, what's the first training session like?
Yeah, you're nervous.
And are those players, because they're the ones looking at you thinking, I wish someone would buy me for 18 million, pay me what you're earning. Are they trying to catch you out, test you, see what you're about?
I think the great thing about that squad is a lot of players are similar ages.
Yeah.
Really young, vibrant squad, some experience like David Batty and Gary Kelly and people like that about, but mainly a lot of kids my age, 21, 22 years old, all want to live the best life and just want to play football without any fear. One club city, so you looked after in the city as well, which is an amazing feeling. But they made me feel really welcome. And a lot of them come through the youth system together as well and been together for 2-3 years. So it was a really nice environment to go in. And what was a great thing for me is I signed on the pitch against Arsenal at Elland Road. And the lads went, we're going out after. And I forget who said to me, they're all going to a pub after. Make sure you go with them. Went there, had the biggest sing-along with loads of beer and stuff flying. Nice. It was a nice introduction to the team, the way it used to be done in the old days.
And actually, you know, you talk about being frustrated with West Ham in some ways because they didn't want to go and break the bank, right? Understandable. You then ended up at a Leeds football club who at that time, like I remember as a football fan, every week it was like, who have they bought this week? Yeah. What have they spent their money on this week? And, you know, mad stories with Peter Ridsdale and all sorts. What was it like being part of that?
It was like that. A lot of players were coming. Robbie Fowler was coming. Robbie Keane was coming from Inter Milan. Seth Johnson was coming. Like, you're thinking, like, all these players. And, like, we had about seven international strikers at one time. It was like crazy, added to an already really talented squad, and I got made captain within the first 2 months I think I was at the club, which was amazing. I didn't expect that, and it just put me on a different level. I was just like, I could feel myself just growing. I felt brilliant in the city. You were loved by the people there. It was just a different type of feeling to be in at West Ham, where it was a bit more of a goldfish bowl. So everything's is under the microscope, under the spotlight, and you've got to perform. More pressure, your Champions League football. It was amazing just to be there, and it was a great stepping stone for what lied ahead.
Well, let's talk about that then. How did it unfold that you went to Leeds and you broke a record there, and before we knew it, you were breaking another record, and this time it was Manchester United that came in?
Yeah, well, I'd gone to the World Cup, and I had, like, Gary Neville, Nicky Butt and that saying to me, the manager had told them to speak to me. So I knew Man United wanted to take me, and they were saying, listen, mate, you really should come. It's like, England, this is nothing compared to Manchester United in terms of, like, the focus, the adulation and what comes with it, and we win as well. Like, and all those things, and it wasn't a hard sell. Plus, I knew what was going on in the background for Leeds with the financial difficulties they were under and the stress and the constraints they were under. So add trophies.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how big is the trophy part of
that? That's the biggest part for me. Don't forget, I think I was 23, 24 years old that year. I hadn't won anything. And I was sitting there thinking, it's all like the clock's ticking, it's a short career. how long have I got left before I'm going to be at a club where I can win? How many more opportunities am I going to get to go to Man United? Will this opportunity come again?
Have they been in for you before?
They told me later on after that that they tried to buy me when I was on loan at Bournemouth from West Ham. They didn't know I was a West Ham player. And Martin Edwards, the CEO at the time, rang Bournemouth and they said, he's not our player. Then he rang Harry and Harry said, he's not for sale. So when Man United came, I was like, add all the things together, plus the overriding factor was to win. I couldn't turn my head anywhere else but other than in that direction.
Yeah. So how does it work then? The guys speak to you on England duty, but obviously that's not a formal part of the process. What happens after that?
Yeah, and they start, a bid goes into the club. So, but the difference is I was lucky. My agent was like a super agent at the time. So he had a little bit of inside knowledge. Philip Green, who owns Topshop, employed one of the directors at Leeds in his previous job.
Right.
So he knew him. So he had that intel, how desperate the club were. So with that intel, I knew that there was no way that Leeds could turn that kind of money down. They were in a desperate position and needed to sell me, or you got to sell 5 or 6 or 7 players. So in a way, effectively, I was almost doing Leeds a favour by getting that money in and also doing myself a favour by going somewhere I can win. So I, when the bid came in and it got to me that Leeds had said no, my agent rang me and said, Leeds have said no, they turn it down. I said, how can they turn it down? I know they can't. He said, well, they have. They said, they're not selling you. Or they want more. So I went down to the stadium where Peter Ridsdale's office was and I sat in his office. He wasn't there. He didn't come for a few hours. And his PA obviously was there. And I was saying, please tell him I'm not leaving until I see him. I won't go. The following day, the team were going to Australia on tour.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm not going. I told him, I'm not going to go on that plane. There's no way I'm getting on that plane until you speak to me and agree a deal with Man United because I'm not coming. I don't want to be here now. I want to go to Man United. In the end, he came. And I remember Terry Venables was manager, I think, then as well. And he was saying to me, Rio, we're going to invest. And I was thinking, I know you're not capable of investing. And I know that's not going to happen. I know what you're trying to do. You want to, your players to stay. I get that. But I'm not going to be here. I'm sorry. And that was it. And then within a day or so, and I ended up going on his boat that summer at the Monaco Grand Prix, Philip Green, just as a thank you. He invited me and I wanted to go and just say thank you for helping and behind the scenes, because I think what they say is that he had some sort of influence behind the scenes of it.
And what do you say when football fans go, bloody hell, you know, Leeds, you were happy to sign the contract, you were a Leeds player, we would have been a better team with you in the team. Why do everything you can to get out? It's the kind of thing that does leave a nasty taste in fans' mouth, but I think it's important for them to hear it from the player's perspective.
Yeah, I do understand that, because it's the passion that goes with supporting your club that fans can't change clubs, like, as players you can. But I think fans have to understand the game is changed a lot. It used to be where you'd have so many players would be one club players for their whole careers. Well, now this change has become a business, more so than when I was playing even. But there was many factors as to why I went. One, I knew they had to sell me because financially I was in a bad place, and history tells you that was the case. And two, Man United were the team that were winning everything at the time.
Yeah.
And as a player, that is what I want to do. Money is very, very far down the list in that sense. It's not about money for me. I was going to be well paid regardless of staying or going. But I had a chance of winning and I wanted to win. And I knew that Leeds were on a downward spiral from this point and wouldn't be capable of winning. So, and I think we went to Villa last year, didn't we? And the Leeds fans, if there wasn't a barrier between me and the fans, they would have got in there and ripped my head off.
Yeah. I mean, just to paint the picture for people listening to this, so it was the away game at Villa Park.
Leeds versus Villa.
Yeah. Leeds Villa. And our studio was literally behind the away fans. There must have been 3,000 of them. And the game's going on. And there was a moment, wasn't there, in the middle of the game where you were having to say, turn around. You're saying to them, turn around, watch the game. Watch the game. All of them, to a man and woman and child, were turned around facing our studio. And I won't repeat on this podcast the words that were being used or the gestures that you were subjected to. But it runs deep, that anger. And do you think that anger is because in their minds you forced the move out of Leeds and that was part of the beginning of the kind of downfall of the club, basically. That
fact it was Man United. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I didn't know the level of like animosity between the clubs. Mm. I didn't understand it. I didn't know it. I'm a London boy. Come to Leeds. Didn't really understand how big that rivalry was. I know now. But
you didn't pick it up while you were playing there?
Not really,
on those games when you played against United?
No, not really. And the team, like the players that had been there, they didn't have that animosity towards Man United that the fans had. Mm. So it didn't spill over to me. I don't think I'd have looked at it any differently, I've got to be honest. But at the same time, I just think the fans, it's hard for fans, they don't look at it like this, but just look at the situation. Look where Leeds went when I left to where I went with Man United. And you've got to go, I think most of the fans, majority would go, you know what, I understand why he done that. But there are a core group that are like, no, we don't care, we don't listen to that, and we're ignorant to everything else that went on. You was a Leeds player and you went to Man United and you're scum.
But the move happened. Mm-hmm. Did you speak to Swalex before the move? Was he part of the kind of convincing job, or is the first time you meet him is the day that you walk through the door and it's the deal's been signed and sealed with Martin?
I'd met him before, just as a conversation, yeah. And he just spoke about the future. But then obviously I go in there in that famous white suit and stuff, and he says, "What the hell are you wearing?" to my mum. What's he got on? I had bleached blonde hair. It was a moment. I made it a moment.
Can you talk us through the thinking behind the white suit? Your idea, someone else's?
I was a serial shopper of clothes anyway at the time. My dad was a tailor, so it kind of just, it was in me. But I went to a shop, I think the shop was called Vertice in South Moulton Street in London. Used to do a lot of like one-off stuff, Italian clothes. And I went in there and I just saw the suit and I bought it and I liked it. I didn't buy it for the occasion. I'd bought it a month or so earlier. And then the move happened and I thought, what am I going to wear? And I looked in my wardrobe and thought, that is it. That's the one.
And was that the one because you, even at that stage, and we're talking, you know, we're going back, what are we going back? 20 years?
2000 and...
Nearly 20 years.
Two.
Feels like 5 minutes.
I know.
Were you even at that point aware, like, if I wear that, it will get some newspaper headlines, there's a bit of a branding exercise going on, I'll make a few headlines.
Jake, I'm going for £30 million. As the most expensive footballer in the country's history, I could care less. I was riding the crest of a wave at that point. No one could tell me that it looked terrible. You couldn't. I looked a 10.5 out of 10.
How good does it feel, right? Put into words, the biggest club in the country breaking a transfer record to buy you. Like,
do you know what it is?
How is this my life?
Yeah, I remember going into a nightclub when I went to Leeds, and just to take you back, I was always in the clubs, and I went into a nightclub, and I remember there was a double page spread of my transfer had gone through, and these guys and girls were putting that on the walls in the nightclub. It was a tight room, like a VIP room, and that was all on the walls and stuff like that. People just like going, throwing champagne everywhere, because a guy like me from my background and this state, how's this happening? But then go to Man United, and this is a different, this is how things can change and dynamics change. I walk into Old Trafford, I feel like the million-dollar man, feel like nothing can stop me, no one can tell me nothing. I'm the guy. I walk into the changing room, and I feel like the smallest guy, and I feel like the person, the most least successful, and the person who has to do the most work, and the person who has to be a sponge to everybody else. So it's a mad dynamic, that the change, the shift that's very quick and immediate. And the pressure then comes of performance. How am I meant to look? What's £30 million look like? What does that do on a match day? What does that do? Am I meant to be the finished article now? Are people looking at me and thinking that I should be the finished article now? Or are they okay for me, like I am in my mind, to come in here and learn? Mm. How am I going to be looked at if that's the case? It's mad.
I'm interested in that psychological shift from being the main man to feeling small. Was it words that were said, or was it an atmosphere, or was it...
It's respect from my side.
Yeah.
So one day, the day I'm signing, I know I feel that all the cameras are there for me. It's a filled-up press room, the lot, it's worldwide news. Everyone's like, you're the man. And you go in a change room, and I look around, and I've got Roy Keane there, the captain, won 5 Premier Leagues. Ryan Giggs, won 5 Premier Leagues. Beck's won 4 Premier Leagues. Scholesy's won 4 Premier Leagues. Sebastian Veron, international footballer from the Serie A. Ruud van Nistelrooy's on fire, the best striker in the league at the moment. I'm not on any of their level. And there's more players I could name that I'm not on their level.
So was it about playing two roles? You had to play the role for the press and the
No, I had my day in the paper and I had my day in the media and then that was switched off. Mm. I became the student, the sponge, the obsessive young footballer that is thinking I've got a lot of work to do to get into a position where these guys here in front of me in my change room respect me. Because I thought I've come in there, I don't think these guys respect me yet. I don't think any of them think I'm a top, top, top player. The England boys know me and they've seen me play and think I'm a good player. But then can I do it at Man United? It's different.
And what about your debut against West Brom? What stands out from that game? Because this is the moment. You don't.
I don't remember one thing from that game.
You must.
I swear to you, I don't. All I remember is
I remember. Because it just felt it all got a bit much.
No, all I remember is the first. I only remember little things. From the first time I put the Man United kit on, I was smelling it. I was pulling it, pulling the socks. How tight are the socks? Are they a good pair of socks? And look at the kit. How's it fit? And that was in the friendly against Boca Juniors at Old Trafford. I don't remember my actual official debut.
What were you so obsessed with the kit for?
You know, like what you like as a kid, and you get as a kid when you get a new kit. How's it fit? Is it a bit tight around the neck or... Oh, has it got collars or...
Look at all the little details.
The details, yeah. The way that the socks, the tightness at the top of the socks, are they going to be tight on my calves or are they going to be long enough to get over my knees? Like all little things like that. Is the foot area comfortable or they're too padded out? Mad stuff. And then you go, oh, no, it's all perfect.
And you won the Premier League in your first season. So how quickly do you shift your mindset again from feeling not worthy at Manchester United to feeling worthy of wearing the shirt?
The mad thing is we won the league, which was one of the best feelings I ever had in football. But I still didn't feel worthy. I still didn't feel like everyone's going, oh my God, you've come, you've cracked it. I can't believe you've won the league again. Because we didn't win the league the season before. Oh, you're a big part of the reason why. People were saying, oh, Rio, you're a big part of the reason. But in my head, I wasn't. I wasn't at a place yet where I felt that this team would miss something if I didn't play. I still felt they could get by without me. And that's why I didn't feel complete still. I didn't feel comfortable still in the change room. I didn't still feel comfortable looking at Roy Keane and Giggsy and people like that who'd won loads and loads of stuff. And it wasn't until probably the following season and from there on where I started to feel, actually, I know if I don't play now, the other players are thinking, oh, no, Rio's not playing. Mm. And even if I'd won the league, didn't mean anything.
Tell us what goes on in the dressing room then. So you signed for Man United. You've been the big money signing, but obviously you want there to be more. So what is the conversation that goes on in the dressing room around? Have you heard who's come in? Have you seen him walk through the door? The gaffer likes him? Or even the manager coming to you saying, Rio, help me out. Speak to this player and tell him to come and sign for United.
Yeah, I think all of that goes on. I think people forget that because we're built up to be these big superhero football players, that we're not fans. We are, first and foremost. We love various different clubs. We love the game. We want to see our club prosper and become successful. So... we're in the change room, looking at all the media, looking at all the papers, and going, do you reckon that's real? Have you spoke to anyone at the club? Anyone spoke to the manager? Anyone spoke to the CEO? To see who's coming. And I was always one of the guys that would be going to David Gill, to the manager, are we signing him? Ronaldinho. Before we signed Cristiano, we were meant to have been getting Ronaldinho. And he chose, I don't know where he chose. He chose Barcelona, I think he chose, or Paris Saint-Germain, somewhere. He chose to go somewhere else. And the whole training ground was deflated.
Really?
What are we going to do
so
now?
So you thought it was going to happen?
Yeah. And we were like, oh my God. And we went on tour. I remember and was like, oh no, we ain't signed. Who are we going to get now? Because the manager made it apparent getting someone in to lift the change room every year was a big thing for him. And then we go on tour. We go and play Sport in Lisbon to open their stadium. And Cristiano Ronaldo plays. And everyone's like... the buzz is back again.
Yeah.
Are we going to get him? Yes, we sign him. And it's like, wow.
When did you find out you'd signed him?
Well, on the bus after the game, I remember being in the change room and me and Nicky Butt were going, we, and looking at each other going, this guy is, whoa, yeah. Are we signing him? And then we got on the bus and we were waiting to leave the stadium and we'd been sitting around for ages and everyone's like moaning, like, when we got to go, this is the back end of a tour. We've been away for 3 weeks. Just want to get home. Mm. And they're started filtering back through the bus. No, they're in there trying to strike a deal for that young kid we just played against who just ripped us up.
And then, do you think they already wanted him, or do you think that performance?
I think he was on the radar. You've got to remember, Man United were good at buying the best young players then. They'd bought Rooney, myself, Van Nistelrooy, etc. They've been starting to do that as a trend of it happening. This was the next one, obviously, from a different stratosphere almost. He was just like amazing. So I think he was on recruitment's list, but there was others on there. Like Charisma was like of his level, they were saying at that point, and there's other players. But then you see it in real life and you go, okay, I get it. I can see it. Let's go and get it.
And for you, that's a dream, because you're thinking, well, if I can stop the ball going in the net, this guy can score for us and we'll be cleaning up.
No, he wasn't that yet.
Right.
He was still a talent that you go, he could be anything. It might not be next year. It might be in about 3 years. But at least we've got him.
And what was the first training session like with him?
No, you see, showboater.
Really?
He was that. He did skills that you just like blow your mind. Like, well, what is this like? But the great thing about him was his intelligence that isn't spoken about as often as it should be for young players. He was the intelligent levels that he had to adapt his game and to understand that I'm not here just to make people happy and people to pay to get through the turnstiles. I'm here to win. I'm here to impact games with goals and assists. And he left the best player in the world. He scored the most goals.
What's it like though when it's a big name defender or a centre half who comes in? What impact did that have on you? And do you think at times Sir Alex wanted to have an impact to keep everyone on their toes?
A big name centre half didn't come in, fortunately. But Nemanja Vidic came in. It's weird because when he first signed, no one would have ever said that he would go on to do what he'd done and become the animal, the huge player that he was. First couple of months he's at the club, I remember Wayne Rooney saying, like, well, who is this guy? I'm tearing him up every day. Do you know what I mean? Gerard Piqué was at the club, but he was a young player coming through. So it never really, they never bought someone who was like, we're buying him to play now.
Right.
So that pressure, I didn't get that. How I'd have reacted, I don't know. I'd have met it head on probably. But they later in my career, as I was getting older, they bought Phil Jones and Chris Smalling. And they were brought in to replace me and Nemanja Vidic. And that was a fight for me. And I remember sitting with my agent at the time. I remember him pulling me before the season and saying, well, read it. Because Harry Redknapp was trying to buy me at Spurs. It was rumours that clubs were interested in me. Man United were listening to offers. And he said, you can't let these guys walk in here and just take your shirt, man. You've been here all this time and done all this stuff. You can't just sit there and accept that. And then I just knuckled down, worked. My mindset was that you have to really be a good player and play well to get me out of this team. And I ended up keeping my shirt. We continued winning. And the rest is history, as they say.
And you had a brilliant career there, obviously. Cleaned up, almost won the lot. And now you get to see it from the other side. I mean, one of my abiding memories, actually, of working with you on BT is first game of the previous season when it felt like real positivity at Manchester United and we did the game and they were announcing Varane, weren't they, onto the field. Yeah. And we were meant to be sitting up in some seats. But you didn't come up to the seats, you stayed down the bottom. And the next thing, he comes over, you know, the eyes of the world at that moment were on him and his big unveiling, and he came over and he gave you a hug. And now you get to kind of see from our side what other players are now going through. And I guess it's probably even more of a circus now, isn't it, with social media and everything else, which wasn't prevalent when you were signing for United.
Yeah, it is like you say, a circus. Everything gets seen. The medical's on TV now, and the signing, the fans, the fanfare that goes with that. Well, when I signed for Leeds, I signed on the pitch against Arsenal at Elland Road. So I understand that part and all the adulation that goes with it, and it's great for everyone concerned. But now there's so much more players having to worry about what we are saying as pundits and the show that goes alongside.
And they do worry as well, by the way.
Yeah, they do. And all of their team worry, like the people that look after them off the pitch and stuff. And it's just like, it is a circus and it is a lot more to it. But at the end of the day, it's still the same old situation. Whatever you get bought for, wherever you go, you've got to go and perform. Simple as that. And if you don't, then there's going to be criticism and you're going to either sink or swim. Simple as.
And when you see these players being unveiled, like the Varane one, for example, are you reminded of how it felt? And is there a tinge of, I'd love to still be at the centre of these stories, man?
No, I don't feel like I'd love it to be me again. I've had my time and I love it. But what it does, it reopens that feeling, that them emotions come back. This is what Alan Miller, he's feeling how I once felt. And you enjoy their feeling with your own a little bit, if you know what I mean. But I'm not one of them that sits there and wishes it back and stuff. I've had it. What's next for me? I do something else that might get that feeling in a different way by doing something else that's successful.
One of the things that you do is you mentor a lot of young players. In fact, you know, sometimes when we're working together and I see you sending messages, you're mentoring players that, you know, you just know, like, you know, friends or friends of friends and things like that. What advice do you give now to young players who sort of see the riches on the other side of a transfer?
It's not like a... I think a lot of people try to overcomplicate things and try to make themselves sound very, very good and very intelligent and on the button with stuff by complicating it. And it goes back, I think, to the old thing. You've got to work hard. There's no substitute for hard work. Consistency of that hard work as well, and being efficient with your work. And I think if you can be them things and add other bits as well, but I think those things have to be there. I don't think you can sustain success without a work ethic. Like, you work hard, you're successful what you do. Stuff that I do now, it's going well. But it's graft, and it isn't over a 2-3 week period or a couple of months. It's over a good few years as the backdrop.
I suppose what you're saying is, for those young players that are like, Rio, I just want the big moment, it's like, don't worry about the big moment. Think about the process.
Yeah.
You know, playing football to the top level will give you all the success you need. There's nothing more that you need to do, is there? All the social media stuff and you know, all of the crazy
stuff. Yeah, and all of the crazy stuff with social media, it's fine, it's good. Do it, but manage it right and find the right balance for you. Not everybody's balance is the same, and that's not going to fit him over there, what you're doing. So just find a balance that suits you. But another thing I'm massive on telling young players, please, please, please expect dips. Whether it's form, whether it's injuries, whatever it is, there's going to be dips in your career. But be ready, expect them, be prepared, and then use it as fuel. Don't let it make you sink and stay under.
Talking of a dip, I suppose it was inevitable. Eventually your time at United has to come to an end, and you have to walk away from a club where you had so much success and loved being there. How difficult was that?
Yeah, because you don't ever imagine that moment. I never prepared myself to leave Man United. Whether that was my mistake or not, I don't know. Maybe because I still thought I should be there, so I wasn't prepared to leave. Looking back now, it was the right time to leave. And I think it's well documented how I felt. I was told, and I didn't agree with that, and I didn't appreciate that at the time, and I've since had conversations with the people involved and ironed that out.
For those listening to this that don't know, you were told at Southampton after the game in the dressing room by Ed Woodward, Rio, that's you done.
Yeah.
I'd love to know what they've said to you since to explain how they came to that decision, because I look at the trophies you won, the service that you gave, and I'm like, where was the parade around the pitch? Where was the public thank you? You know, players now play for a club for 6 months and they get these huge fanfare departures. What happened?
Yeah, I was just told in the exact manner you just said there, and it was like, I was startled, really. I was like taken aback. Like, I sat there and the lads see me, and obviously see me at my face and the way I was sitting there, like perturbed, thinking, wow, what's happened there? And they were saying, and I said, they just told me I'm not getting a new deal. I've got to go. And the lads were like, wow. And that feeling of, like, whether rejection is the right word, but just like, I was sitting there in disbelief, really. Like, is that how I'm going to go out? Is that how I'm leaving this club?
How was that allowed to happen then? What have they said since?
I don't know. I spoke to Ed Woodward and told him I weren't happy with that. Yeah. And I said it actually on BT, but then I've lately told him as well. And I've met up and spoke to Ed Woodward quite a lot, and we speak on the phone, on text and stuff like that. So I told him I wasn't happy. And I think just being upfront and honest with him and telling him, listen, that weren't cool. That weren't the right way to do it. Given someone who's given the bulk of their careers at the football club and in probably the most successful time at the club over that period of time, to be told that wasn't right, and going forward that needs to be fixed for other players so they don't have to go through it. But I wasn't the only one. I think other players it happened to as well. And then when you see other clubs, the way that they see out their players, and you think, wow, like, I've got no divine right, but when I'm seeing other clubs deal with their players in such a way, with the respect and with the gestures that they get, and you think, wow, it wasn't dealt with the right way here. But listen, I'm not sitting here still feeling a way about it. I'm past that. But at the moment, it took me a while to get over it. Whether that's right or wrong, I don't know. But it hurt my feelings. I'm not ashamed to say that.
It's probably a good message for any young footballers that you can do all of that and you can still be seen as just the player.
Yeah, you want to be appreciated.
Yeah.
Like, I came out of there, when I walked into that club, I said in the press conference, you can look this up, I just, when I leave here, I want to leave an imprint, like, on the walls that I've done something that's added value and added to this club with trophies and success. And I think I've done that. I played my part. I played my role with all my teammates and the management and the fans. But just felt that when I left, the way I left, just that wasn't acknowledged or appreciated at all.
And now that you can sit and look back on all of those stories from West Ham and saying no to Roma, not going to Liverpool, taking the opportunity at Leeds, sort of in some ways forcing that move to make sure it happened, and you went to United and won all the trophies and had the career you had, and then ending up at QPR. Is there any sense of, I wish I'd done something differently?
I wouldn't change it, but I would love to have gone abroad. The problem is, I just don't know when I would have gone.
Yeah.
Because I was so obsessed. I grew into being obsessed with playing for Man United and winning. So there was never a real any time in my life where I thought I would leave. But I wish I'd have played abroad. It's a weird one. But because just if I'd gone to Barcelona when I knew that I could have gone there,
yeah,
I would have been involved in a team that went on to dominate. But it's all if, buts and maybes.
Everything has a price, right?
Exactly.
And the price of being a Man United legend is not going to go abroad.
Exactly. So that's what I mean. I can walk around now and I have a core set of fans who know and respect what I've done for that football club. Yeah. Whereas a lot of people I see who have flitted with different clubs don't have that core support. And it's a shame, really, because I think you give yourself to the game, you deserve some sort of recognition from a set of fans, but you've got to then commit and be there for that time to gain that and earn that.
And it's an interesting one, that, when it comes to transfers and moving around. Like, we work with those players that have done that.
Mm.
And you know that feeling that they don't belong anywhere. And you feel, you can see, just there's a little something missing. Because while you're playing, you've got your career. Once your career's over, all you've got is the sense of belonging, that feeling of an allegiance with a certain group or a certain set of fans or a certain football club. And I think that then is, that's all you've got, because you retire at 30. You've probably got 50 years of that, much longer of that than you have of the playing side. And if you haven't got that, I sense it among some of you guys.
And that's why it didn't last long, the hurt of the way I kind of left Man United, because I know, going back to the club, I get the right vibes and feeling when I go there. I get a sense that, yeah, you was part of this. You made some history at the club. You was part of a team that was great here, part of various teams that were great here. So I get that. And it, yeah, like you say, we walk around and work with people that you go, well they haven't really got a home at times. And yeah, it's strange. I'd find that strange, knowing how I feel and how I'm received at Man United now. And at West Ham as well, to be fair.
What an interesting chat. Thanks for your time, mate.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
I can't imagine what it's like being at the centre of those multi-million pound deals. So illuminating to sit down and hear from Rio directly, and that pure self-belief to make sure he lived up to the price tag. Leeds fans obviously still smart over his move across the Pennines to United, and Premier League history is not short on controversial transfers. Robbie Savage infuriated the blue half of Birmingham when he agitated for a move to Blackburn in 2005. Now, he holds his hands up, sort of, to being in the wrong.
When I had the chance to go to Blackburn Rovers under my hero, Mark Hughes, again, two people who treated me extremely well when I was a youth player at Manchester United. Mark Hughes was my hero, was my Wales manager. I'd done everything I could wrongly to force and engineer a move. I'd just signed a new four-year contract. Steve Bruce was great with me, the fans were great with me, and I was their best player. You know, Christophe Dugarry, who won the World Cup, come second in Player of the Year that year. You know, I won it, and that's how good I was. So Blackburn wanted me, you know, I forced it in the way my behaviour was unacceptable, and I think the Birmingham fans had the right to feel the way I betrayed them, because, you know, I should have done it more, you know, in a professional manner, but I had to do it to get out, because I was that good for them. They wouldn't have saw me. And if I hadn't have done it, I don't believe I would have ever have left, because the character I was, I wouldn't have sulked. I'd have got on with it, and I'd have probably gone on to be the best player the next season for Birmingham. But I got what I wanted, you know, and I had a great time at Blackburn.
One of my favourite things about the chat with Rio is hearing about those transfers that almost happened. And I wonder what it's like for a manager trying to get deals done and then seeing them fall by the wayside. Harry Redknapp has a great story about trying to sign a future Premier League legend for Tottenham, only to see him join their London rivals Chelsea a few months later.
Eden Hazard, I should have got him at Tottenham. You know, I went to Joe Cole rung me and said, Harry, I'm playing with a boy at Lille. He said, he's the best player I've ever played with. I said, that's a bit of a statement, Joe. You've played with a few players, you know. And he said, Harry, he's amazing, this boy, you know. And I went over, I went three times, but I only had to go 10 minutes, really. I saw enough. At the time, you know, I don't think Daniel had the appetite to, or Joe Lewis had the appetite to pay big money for him. I think it was probably been about 22 million pounds at that time. So I didn't get him and I was choked. I knew he was going to go on to be a superstar, but he was at Chelsea. And Chelsea came in about 3-4 months later and bought him.
How different it all could have been. Well, I hope you enjoyed this journey through the ups and downs of Premier League transfers. It really does come down to bosses like Redknapp who will triumph or fall on their sword on the basis of how these moves work out. Anyway, join us next time on the Premier League Storybook to hear much more from Harry. Our next chapter is the managers.
BT Sport Pods.